I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
The model of aid distribution proposed by Israel does not align with core humanitarian principle. It will deprive large part of Gaza, the highly vulnerable people, of desperately needed assistance.
Israeli troops have fatally shot at least 10 Palestinians as they attempted to collect food and aid amidst the chaotic unveiling of a new Israeli-U.S.-backed aid distribution plan run by a shadowy U.S. group that sidelines the United Nations. We'll speak to Jeremy Scahill of Drop Site News about this and proposals for a new ceasefire in Gaza. Plus, we'll look at Israel's use of Palestinians as human shields in Gaza and the West Bank. We'll talk to Nadav Wyman, a former Israeli soldier who heads the group Breaking the Silence.
We got testifiers from December 2023 telling us that they were ordered to use Palestinians as human shields. And then we got more and more testifiers, different units, different times of the war in Gaza, and different places on the Gaza Strip, which means that it's a widely spread protocol in the IDF, and it's called the Mosquito Protocol, using Palestinians as human shields.
But first, the Trump administration's escalating its attacks on international students, with Secretary of State Marco Rubio announcing the U.S. will begin aggressively revoking the visas of Chinese students. We'll speak to Jamil Jaffer, head of the Knight First Amendment Institute at Columbia University. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Gaza, at least two people were crushed to death and two others fatally shot Wednesday as thousands of starving Palestinians rushed to United Nations humanitarian aid distribution warehouse in Deir al-Balah, tearing open its metal walls in a desperate attempt to find food. Witnesses described a chaotic scene as starving people clamored for the supplies.
I'm hungry and I want to eat. There's no flour, no food, no bread. There's nothing at home. Every time I go get aid, I take hold of a box and 100 people crowd over me. 300. I couldn't take anything. I just go home empty-handed. Before, the UN agency used to send me a message and I would go like any respected person. I'd take the aid and I'd go back home. Now there is nothing. If you're strong, you get aid. If you're not strong, you don't.
Gaza officials say at least 10 Palestinians seeking aid have been killed by Israeli forces in the past 3 days. The World Food Program said in a statement, quote, humanitarian needs have spiraled out of control after 80 days of complete blockade of all food assistance and other aid into Gaza. Gaza needs an immediate scale up of food assistance. This is the only way to reassure people they will not starve, unquote. Elsewhere, Israeli attacks so far today have killed at least 55 people across Gaza. Among the dead, Palestinian journalist Maltaz Rajab, who was killed along with four other civilians in an Israeli strike on his vehicle in Gaza City. He's at least the 221st media worker killed by Israel in Gaza since October 2023. Meanwhile, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said his forces had killed Hamas commander Mohammed Sinwar. He was apparently the target of a May 13th strike in Khan Yunis, when Israeli warplanes simultaneously dropped six large bombs on the European hospital. 28 people were killed, dozens more wounded in that attack. International doctors and healthcare workers report they're increasingly being blocked by Israel from entering Gaza, with specialists approved for exits but denied new entry visas and what advocates are calling an undeclared medical siege. On Wednesday, U.S. trauma surgeon Dr. Feroz Sidwa testified to the U.N. Security Council about his time spent as an emergency doctor at the European hospital in Gaza, where he treated young children severely injured by explosives.
Children are supposed to be protected. In Gaza, these protections are simply gone. Every day, the distinction between combatant and civilian is erased. Most of my patients were preteen children, their bodies shattered by explosives and torn by flying metal. The medical system has not failed. It has been systematically dismantled through a sustained military campaign that has willfully violated international humanitarian law. Civilians are now dying not just from the constant airstrikes, but from acute malnutrition, sepsis, exposure, and despair.
In the occupied West Bank, family members say Israeli soldiers burst into their home without warning early Wednesday before shooting 20-year-old Palestinian Jassem Al-Sadha as he slept. The young man was reportedly left to bleed to death with no one allowed to approach him. His killing came as the Israeli military continues its campaign of stepped-up raids and home demolitions across the West Bank, where Israeli ministers have just approved 22 new settlements, which are illegal under international law. It's the largest such expansion in Israel's history. This comes amidst a surge of attacks by settlers on Palestinian communities. On Tuesday, residents of Kariot reported Israeli settlers descended on their village without warning, setting fire to homes and property.
We were at home, sitting safely. There was no one outside at all. When we were surprised by the sounds of bangs and saw fire and smoke, we opened the door and were surprised to see a huge number of settlers and no one else. They set fires to cars and houses and damaged the neighborhood. They burnt maybe 10 cars, as you can see. They burnt the house and damaged the cars. They even hit people. I went outside and I was also beaten by a bat.
Meanwhile, a new Israeli law allows for children as young as 12 years old to be sentenced to life in prison. UN experts say the law is designed to punish Palestinian families and likely violates international laws, including the Convention of the Rights of the Child. In New York, a three-judge panel at the Court of International Trade has ruled President Trump's sweeping global tariffs were imposed illegally, blocking Trump for now from pursuing much of his trade war. The court agreed with business owners in a dozen states that sued Trump, arguing the president exceeded his authority by invoking a national emergency to bypass Congress in order to impose the tariffs. The ruling applies to Trump's so-called Liberation Day tariffs, which roiled global markets in April, and to his levies on Canada and Mexico that he claimed were related to the flow of drugs and people across borders. Industry-specific tariffs imposed on automobiles, steel, and aluminum are not affected by the order. The White House is expected to appeal. Stephen Miller, Deputy Chief of Staff for Policy, wrote on social media, quote, "the judicial coup is out of control," unquote. President Trump has nominated Emil Bovey, his former personal defense attorney, and current Justice Department official, to the third U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. Among other things, Emil Bovey threatened to fire attorneys in the Justice Department's public integrity section if they refused to file a motion to dismiss the corruption case against New York Mayor Eric Adams. And he accused FBI leaders of insubordination after they refused to identify agents involved in the January 6 Capitol insurrection investigations. Trump also announced new nominees for a federal district court in Florida. The Alliance for Justice this week urged senators to oppose Trump's previously announced judicial nominees, warning they all, quote, demonstrated their opposition to the protections of the law and their loyalty to the Trumpian agenda, unquote. Secretary of State Marco Rubio warned the government will start aggressively revoking the visas of Chinese students one day after the Trump administration announced it's halting the processing of visas of international students. Rubio said people with links to the Chinese Communist Party, China's sole and ruling party, would be especially targeted, as well as people studying in, quote unquote, critical fields. Chinese nationals represent the second largest proportion of overseas students in the U.S. after India. Meanwhile, President Trump told reporters Wednesday Harvard should cap its acceptance of international students at around 15%. Last week, Trump revoked Harvard certification for admitting students from overseas. A federal judge in New Jersey has ruled the Trump administration's efforts to deport Columbia graduate Palestinian activist Mahmoud Khalil is likely unconstitutional. And arguments that Khalil represents a threat to national security and foreign policy are not likely to hold up. But Judge Michael Farbiars stopped short of ordering Khalil's release from a Gina, Louisiana immigration jail pending developments on separate Trump administration charges against him related to his permanent residency application. Last week, Mahmoud Khalil testified that deportation would be life-threatening due to smears and lies by the Trump administration. He's married to a U.S. citizen who gave birth to the couple's first child, Dean, last month. Here in New York, masked federal agents arrested multiple people who showed up for appointments at immigration courts in downtown Manhattan Wednesday, including a family with small children. Police officers arrested protesters and observers who showed up to offer support and assistance, including a pastor. Community members also blocked vans carrying immigrants from driving down the street before police officers pepper sprayed, violently tackled, dragged them away. The Trump administration's reportedly ordered ICE to make 3,000 arrests per day. NBC News is reporting immigration judges have moved to dismiss at least 14 cases involving immigrants who were expelled without due process to an El Salvador mega prison under the Alien Enemies Act, despite ongoing legal challenges over Trump's invocation of the 1798 wartime law. One of the recently dismissed asylum cases involves Andre Hernandez Romero, a gay makeup artist from Venezuela who was apparently expelled because he had tattoos. In more immigration news, a federal judge in New York heard arguments Wednesday that could undermine the fate of some 500,000 Haitian recipients of temporary protected status, TPS, whose deportation protections are at risk of expiring in August after the Trump administration moved to prematurely cut off their TPS status. This is Aline Gay, executive director of Haitian Women for Haitian Refugees.
This is a huge disruption, not only to their lives, creating anxiety and harm, wreaking havoc in our communities at large, but it's also unlawful because this is precisely the reason why temporary protective status was created, right? For folks to not be returned back to situations that have a lot of political instability, violence, natural disasters, and that is exactly what we're seeing in Haiti today.
The White House confirmed Elon Musk will be leaving the Trump administration after leading efforts to gut government agencies while firing tens of thousands of workers through his Department of Government Efficiency. The confirmed departure came after Musk said he was disappointed President Trump is pursuing the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, a massive spending bill that increases the budget deficit. Musk said, quote, "I think a bill can be big or it can be beautiful, but I don't think it can be both," unquote. The Congressional Budget Office projects the legislation would add $3.8 trillion to the national debt over 10 years, slashing taxes for the wealthy while gutting social programs, including massive cuts to Medicare and Medicaid. Meanwhile, legal experts are sounding the alarm over a little notice provision of the more than 1,000-page spending bill, which shields the president from contempt of court citations by federal judges. That would pave the way for the Trump administration officials to continue ignoring court orders without fear of consequence. Harvard's agreed to hand over 175-year-old photographs of an enslaved man and his daughter to a Black History Museum in South Carolina as part of a settlement with the descendant of the photo's subjects. The deal caps a 15-year legal battle between Harvard and Tamara Lanier, whose great-great-great-grandfather, Renty, is featured in the photos. Lanier celebrated the long-anticipated resolution, saying, quote, "This pilfered property, images taken without dignity or consent and used to promote a racist psychoscience, will now be repatriated to a home where their stories can be told and their humanity can be restored," unquote. To see more on that story, go to democracynow.org. And Namibia has issued fresh calls for reparations from Germany as Namibia marked its first National Genocide Remembrance Day Wednesday. Between 1904 and 8, German colonial invaders killed up to 100,000 indigenous people, most from the Ovejero and Nama communities. This is Ovejero leader Jos Ruaco.
What has happened here, because this is the first genocide of the 20th century. This was actually the prelude to the, you know, to the Holocaust. But this is not recorded anywhere. People are not aware of what has happened here to the same level and same extent as some of the other atrocities.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. Secretary of State Marco Rubio warned the government will start aggressively revoking the visas of Chinese students one day after the Trump administration announced it's halting the processing of visas for foreign students as it prepares to require additional social media vetting for every applicant. Rubio said students with links to the Chinese Communist Party, which is China's sole and ruling party, would be especially targeted, as well as people studying in, quote, critical fields. Chinese nationals represent the second largest proportion of overseas students in the U.S. Meanwhile, President Trump told reporters Wednesday Harvard should cap its acceptance of international students at around 15%. Last week, Trump revoked Harvard's certification for admitting overseas students. Currently, over a quarter of Harvard's student body is international. Many of those students are now seeking to transfer to another school. Harvard's commencement ceremonies are taking place today. This week, Harvard students protested in support of international students. This is Pakistani international student Abdullah Shahid Sal, who is also the student body co-president of Harvard's Undergraduate Association.
I haven't had the time yet to think about my backup plans, but as of now, I don't think anyone is sure if they can return for their fall semester back into Harvard and more broadly back into the U.S. In that case, I would have to look for other options. I haven't looked at the list yet for the next available ones because the most transfer windows for most colleges have already been closed. But I also want to make it very, very clear that deporting international students doesn't solve any of this. We don't have any provided mechanism by President Trump's administration that deporting international students in this particular manner will solve any of these issues.
This comes as a federal judge in New Jersey found the Trump administration's efforts to deport Columbia graduate Palestinian activist Mahmoud Khalil is likely unconstitutional, but stopped short of ordering his release from Jena, Louisiana immigration jail. In another high-profile case targeting international students and academics, a judge has granted bail to Russian Harvard scientist Ksenia Petrova, ruling her 3-month-long detention by immigration authorities is unjustified. For more, we're joined by Jamil Jaffer, director of the Knight First Amendment Institute at Columbia University, part of a team of lawyers representing professors in their lawsuit against the Trump administration's repression of students and faculty involved in pro-Palestine activism. He was previously the ACLU's deputy legal director. Jamil, welcome back to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us. This attack on students at Columbia, at Harvard, around the country, and now the latest news that broke in the last hours about going after, in particular, Chinese students, the second largest number of students in the United States, well over a quarter of a million students. Can you just respond to what's happening here?
Well, I mean, I really don't think any foreign enemy could do nearly as much damage to the United States as the Trump administration is doing to it right now. I mean, even this policy alone, the one focused on Chinese students, is going to have an immediate effect, not just on the Chinese students who are already here, but on the willingness of Chinese nationals to come to the United States. That's obviously the whole point of it. But, you know, Chinese nationals who study in the United States bring a lot to the United States. I mean, it's a wonderful, amazing thing that people come from all over the world to study at American universities. You know, they enrich the experiences of American students at those universities. They pay tuition. They contribute to research collaborations. They engage in all sorts of socially useful projects that have implications not just for students and faculty at the universities, but for American society. It's an amazing thing. And the Trump administration is taking aim at, you know, at all of that. And it's going to have immediate and, I'm afraid, irreparable consequences for American leadership and prosperity. It's really just difficult for me to think of any conceivable theory on which this is going to help the United States.
And if you could respond also to the fact that the Trump administration has announced a pause in the processing of visas for all foreign students, and that it's done so at this time when the maximum number of students from abroad are applying for visas for September admissions. And just to make clear, there are over a million international students from over 200 countries enrolled in U.S. colleges. Yeah. That was the case, the numbers for 2023-2024.
Yeah, I mean, let me just start by saying this is so incredibly cruel to the, you know, for the people who are here. This is so disruptive, right? They have relied on the fact that they were given visas by the State Department. They are here lawfully. They are studying here at the invitation of the United States, and this is designed to, you know, disrupt their lives in the most fundamental way. But then beyond that, it's going to be such a big deal for these universities because foreign students make up a very high percentage of the students at major American universities. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but I believe it's something close to 40% at Columbia and somewhere around 25% at Harvard. And foreign students pay a disproportionate share of the tuition. So universities in the United States are reliant on the income they get from the foreign students who study here. And it's going to be a huge deal for American universities when all of these students who are studying here lawfully find it necessary to consider withdrawing, and all of the students who would otherwise apply to the United States end up applying to, you know, Canada or Australia or Europe instead.
Well, I'd like to go to comments made by Secretary of State Marco Rubio during a Senate hearing, the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations earlier this month. He said the Trump administration would continue to reconsider granting international student visas.
If you tell me that you're coming to the United States to lead campus crusades, to take over libraries and burn down, try to burn down buildings and acts of violence, we're not going to give you a visa.
Is that what Ms.
So, Jamil, that was Secretary of State Marco Rubio. If you could speak specifically about the Trump administration's justification for this. In other words, they're looking to expand social media vetting for every applicant. And also the fact that in his last administration, Trump already imposed a stricter review of visa applicants, including social media screening. So,
yeah.
First of all, why wasn't that reversed during the Biden administration? Is it difficult to do so?
Yeah, good question.
What kind of social media screenings are we looking at?
So this screening has been in place now for, a pilot version of it was put in place under the Obama administration. It's been expanded since then, principally by the Trump administration. It applies now to about 14 million people who apply for visas every year are required to submit their social media handles to the State Department with their visa application. And now the Trump administration is proposing to expand it even further. The evidence we have is that this program has been entirely ineffective at achieving the ends that the Trump administration says it was designed to achieve. The goal was to identify national security threats. There is no evidence at all that this program has resulted in the identification of national security threats. And in fact, my organization, the Knight Institute, sued several years ago under the Freedom of Information Act to find out how this program was actually operating and what the results of the program had been. And one of the documents we got in response to our FOIA request was a document from inside the Director of National Intelligence, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, conceding that the program had been ineffective. That was their word, ineffective. And now this program is going to be expanded. Now, it is ineffective at identifying national security threats, but it is very effective at chilling free speech and association that is protected by the First Amendment. And there is an ongoing lawsuit. We're involved in a lawsuit on behalf of two documentary film organizations, Doc Society, and the International Documentary Association. We sued over the constitutionality of this program several years ago. The case is now pending before the D.C. Circuit.
And what about, why wasn't, sorry, just one second, the Biden administration, why wasn't this reversed during all those years?
So we repeatedly asked the Biden administration to reverse this policy. The Brennan Center, which we are working with on this specific issue, repeatedly asked the Biden administration to reverse this policy, and the Biden administration did not do that.
So you're a graduate of Harvard Law School. Actually, you were an international student from Canada at the time, right?
That's right.
You are work at Columbia University. Mm-hmm. By the way, the latest news out of Harvard is they're not only going to go after the students, but anyone they will be reviewing the visa who is involved there. But we just heard Marco Rubio talking about troublemakers, essentially, going after them and cleaning. Now it's a new rule, whether you live in another country or here and you're leaving the country, you got to pack your bags, clean your room, and clean all your social media sites, right, to help get back into this country. I want to ask about Mahmoud Akhlil. He's a Columbia student, now a graduate. Mm-hmm. He's imprisoned. He graduated while he was imprisoned in Louisiana. Negotiator between the students and Columbia University around the encampments. And then you have a judge ruling, a New Jersey federal judge ruling that it is likely unconstitutional what has happened to him. And you have a Vermont federal judge calling for the release on bail of a student Harvard scientist named Ksenia Petrova, who came into the United States and was taken by ICE and is jailed. Can you respond to these cases and the message they are sending and what has to happen here?
Yeah, I mean, let me start with the Khalil case. So this was an important legal victory that Khalil won yesterday before Judge Farbiarsh in New Jersey. And Khalil is very well represented. He has great lawyers at the ACLU and the Center for Constitutional Rights. And I think that that legal victory is something to celebrate. But at the end of the day, he is still behind bars. You know, it's been almost 3 months, and he is still behind bars. And on the basis of what? Activity that is plainly protected by the First Amendment. You know, he's behind bars because of his human rights advocacy. And I think that, you know, that is a really incredible and shocking thing. If the First Amendment was supposed to prevent anything, it was supposed to prevent the government arresting you on the basis of your political beliefs. But that's what's going on here. And he has been detained for 3 months already. I think it's kind of, you know, crazy that it's already gone on for so long, and I hope that Judge Farbiarsh gets to the First Amendment questions very quickly.
And also, just to be clear, he's not a foreign student. He is a green card holder, permanent resident of the United States. And then to ask about the Russian scientist who's at Harvard University, who was, she's also been detained in this Louisiana ICE detention facility for months. Now, in her case, she's also been criminally charged in addition to violating immigration laws. She didn't declare these lab frogs, I mean, that she had brought in from France, which is normally considered a trivial violation. Mm-hmm. She's been criminally charged for smuggling, for bringing in these frogs. But the Trump administration has also issued a detainer on immigration charges, which effectively means that even as if she's granted bail, with the judge yesterday ordered, if she's granted bail on the criminal case, the government could still get ICE to detain her. If you could elaborate.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very unusual reaction on the part of the government to what, as you say, is usually considered a trivial offense. I think the message here is, I mean, just, you know, beyond the kind of arbitrariness of it and the cruelty of it, the message here is not just to, you know, her specifically, but to any foreign national who's considering coming to the United States right now. Like, the message is, you're not welcome. And, you know, you see that message delivered through all of these policies, the one that we started with, the policy relating to Chinese nationals, the roundup of students who protested on campus last year, the revocation of Harvard's authority to host foreign students. Like, all of this is meant to send a broader message, which is that, you know, foreign nationals aren't welcome in the United States. And, you know, that is deeply problematic for many of those foreign nationals, but it is also extremely damaging to the United States at every level, you know, from security to the economy to American prestige in the world, to our ability to carry out scientific projects that have very real implications for ordinary Americans. You know, it's not just people at Harvard who get cancer or, you know, get Alzheimer's. It's ordinary Americans get these diseases, and they need cures to these diseases. And the research is being done at major American universities. And it'll